Ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you all very much. Let us call this Thursday, April 23rd, 2015 meeting of the Northern Virginia Transportation Authority to order. Ms. Spear, would you please take the roll?
Chairman Noe.
Here.
Mayor Yule. Chair Hines.
Here.
Supervisor Letourneau.
Here.
Chairman Bulba.
Here.
Mayor Parrish.
Here.
Mayor Silverthorne. Councilmember Rochelle.
Here.
Councilmember Snyder. Senator Evan. Delegate Rupp.
I saw him.
He's here.
Delegate Minshew. Ms. Bushu.
Here.
Mr. Garzinski.
Here.
Mayor Frazier. Ms. Cuervo.
Here.
Mr. Horsley.
Here.
Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Thank you very much. First item of business is the minutes for March 25th. Any comments, questions, observations need to be made?
Chairman, I move approval.
Motion by Mrs. Bulba, second by Mr. Parrish. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Mr. Garzinski abstaining. Abstentions from Mr. Garzinski and Mr. Letourneau. Next, we have a presentation. Mr. Donahue.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Thanks for the opportunity to be here with you this evening. Excuse me. Ms. Backman asked me to come and update the members of this board on the current status of the House Bill 2 implementation. I'm here to just give you an update on the House Bill 2 statewide prioritization process, as well as talk about how the recently passed and signed omnibus transportation bill would influence the implementation of House Bill 2 in the Northern Virginia region. Before I get into the current status of the update, I just want to remind members of the overarching requirements of the legislation. This was passed in the 2014 General Assembly session by unanimous vote in both the House and the Senate, and it requires the Commonwealth Transportation Board adopt a statewide prioritization process that will be used starting with the FY17 to 22 six-year improvement program. So not the program that the board released at its last meeting, but the one that it will consider in the early part of 2016. The other part is the prioritization process applies generally to the construction program, but only to funds that are used to really expand or enhance capacity of the transportation network that we have. To put that in perspective, the six-year program on an annual basis spends about $1.4 billion on construction. Once you take away things like debt service, specialized programs like the revenue sharing program, the congestion mitigation air quality program, and really the large sum is the bridge replacement and pavement reconstruction, out of that, you're left with about $400 million annually. So it's a fair amount of funding that runs through this, but it is a minority of the overall construction program that's in place. The legislation that the General Assembly enacted does give the board several things to consider as it develops these prioritization process. So it explicitly requires the board to consider five factors and six in areas like Northern Virginia with a population of over 200,000. And those factors are congestion mitigation, economic development, accessibility, safety, environmental quality, and then again, the larger urban areas, transportation and land use coordination. The legislation also, which has proven one of the more difficult things to get right, requires us to look at each of those factors and try and weight them in orders of importance for the various regions. And that was really a recognition by the General Assembly that the needs of the Bristol area are very, very different than the needs of Northern Virginia. And so when we look at these projects, we should be thinking about congestion in areas like Northern Virginia as the highest weight, and then areas like Bristol, maybe safety or economic development that get that higher weight. One of the things Secretary Lane asked us, myself and the team working on this, to do as we started the implementation of this process was to really go out and get outreach from folks like yourself and your peers across the state as we did this. And so the Commonwealth Transportation Board has held over 18 public hearings on the House Bill 2 process in conjunction with the six-year improvement program. I've personally visited with all the MPOs and any PDC that would have me across the Commonwealth to talk about this issue. And we really thought it was important that as we developed this, it couldn't just be something where we sat in Richmond in a room and lock the door and try to come up with something, because then we would have really screwed it up. And so we've really tried to go out and take input and use that initial input we got to develop kind of a draft process. That draft process was released by the board at its March meeting. One of the things I want to say before I get into some of the slides that go through that draft process is it has some warts. There's some things in there that we know we need to change, and we will be coming back to the Commonwealth Transportation Board at its May meeting with some suggested revisions based on the feedback we've gotten to date, and I expect some feedback that we may hear this evening and in the coming weeks as we go to the other 9 districts to hold additional public hearings. So if you see something in here that, you know, doesn't make sense, let us know. And if you've told me in the last 2 months, I apologize that it hasn't changed. We're kind of presenting what the draft process is, but there will be future changes at the Northern Virginia Commonwealth Transportation Board meeting on May 19th. And so with that, Mr. Chairman, I kind of want to just walk through the process. And some of this has changed with the Omnibus Transportation Bill. And so there are going to be 2 programs that are available for local governments and regional entities to really participate in under the new formula that was signed into law with House Bill 1887. And 2 of those programs are subject to House Bill 2. So the first one of those programs is the High Priority Projects Program. And that is really a project focused on kind of larger projects of a more statewide or regional nature. And when projects are submitted to the board for in that program, they're going to screen them to determine whether or not they meet a need on a corridor of statewide significance or on a kind of something to improve travel within an urbanized area like here in Northern Virginia. There's also now a second program called the Construction District Grant Program, where funds will be distributed to each of the 9 districts, and then there will be an HB2 kind of competition within each of the 9 construction districts across the Commonwealth. And under that program, there's a bit more flexibility. And so any project that meets a need, really identifying the long-range plan, which could be for safety, locally designated growth areas, or the corridors of statewide significance, can be evaluated under that process. This is a big change from the last time I came and presented before the authority, Mr. Chairman. If you recall, when I was here, I think it was last September. So when we were talking about this, it was a statewide kind of free-for-all. And projects in Northern Virginia were always going to compete against projects from Hampton Road and compete against projects from Lynchburg. As we went around and talked to people across the state, including, I believe, this body, there was a little concern that that wasn't going to shake out well for each of the regions. And so everywhere I went except for here, they were convinced there was going to be a large sucking sound and the money was going to flow northward, you know, on 95 or eastward on 66. And then when I came and talked to you all, I heard some consternation that perhaps this was set up to send the money down to Lynchburg, Bristol, and other places. So yes, hopefully some of the changes that happened in the Omnibus Transportation Bill will create a little bit more comfort with this process, knowing that we are getting ready to go into kind of uncharted territory with this prioritization process, because each district is going to have funding that's available and dedicated just to that district, you know, each year, a 6-year program. And then there will be additional funding for those larger, more expensive statewide and regional projects, which will be a competition against all the different districts.
Mr. Chairman, I would add from a sense of the CTB on this high on the high priority projects that it's going to be pretty selective. I have the flavor of the thoughts from just the last meeting that Nick and I were at down at Hampton Roads is that we're going to look to the MPOs for suggested candidates for high priority, but they really have to be corridor statewide significance, moving the most people and goods for the greatest impact. And so it's really going to be pretty selective. That's not going to be awarded loosely by the CTB. You have to keep that in mind. That will truly be selective and competitive, because as Nick said, from Bristol to Hampton Roads to Northern Virginia to Winchester, everybody thinks that project is a high priority. But we're talking about things like, I just use as an example up here, you know, what's happening in the Fairfax Parkway, or take Route 1 in Fairfax or Prince William, or something major going on that we can contribute to multimodal transportation in the inner core. But it's got to be that significant. So I just wanted to clarify that.
One of the other things that we tried to develop with the input that we have, and this was really guided a lot by the board's guidance. Again, we have to weight these factors differently in different parts of the state. And again, just a reminder, the law requires that Northern Virginia congestion mitigation be the highest weighted factor. The board really indicated that they didn't want to have a ton of different weighting frameworks. Some local governments requested multiple frameworks for their own locality. And then we realized how many projects they had corresponded with how many weighting frameworks that they wanted. And so the board kind of said, no, guys, we want to have a limited number. We want to be flexible enough to work with the different jurisdictions or in areas. But, you know, we're going to only have a few of these. We're not cooking the system. And so we developed four different weighting frameworks, and we're recommending that these apply at the MPO. And in this region, it would be the Northern Virginia Transportation Authority boundary and the PDC boundary across the state. And we analyzed per capita BMT, per capita GDP, severe injuries and fatalities, and a host of other demographic and safety and travel characteristics. And we came up with these four draft weighting frameworks. Category A is the one that would apply to this region. Again, it's the one where congestion mitigation is weighted the highest. And so in this area, 35% of a project score would be based on its impact to congestion mitigation. 10% would be on economic development, 25% on accessibility, and then 10% each on safety, environmental quality, and land use.
And that's going to be very time-consuming at this next meeting because there's varied thoughts on those weightings by members of the board. Just say that and leave it.
And Mr. Chairman, to add a finer point to Mr. Brzezinski's comments, we have heard the most feedback far and away about these weighting frameworks. A lot of people generally don't want to be in the same category with Northern Virginia, something we have found out. And they don't even really want to be in the category next to Northern Virginia. So a lot of folks have said, no, move me down. We don't want to be have congestion weighted that highest. But this is something that we're going to be talking about when we're in Northern Virginia in May. We're going to have about a 3 to 4 hour discussion about the weighting frameworks, the measures, and some other things. And so it's going to be a very robust dialogue and workshop session when we're up here in Fairfax next month. So this map here shows you how the weighting framework would apply across the state. So currently, the Category A areas would be this region, along with the Richmond MPO and the Hampton Roads area. And then you kind of have the Culpeper, Winchester, Charlottesville, and Roanoke areas being in the next highest category. And then you kind of see the orange or salmon color and the blue in the more rural areas where safety and economic development are a much higher priority. I want to talk a little bit about the project scores. So one of the things as we worked on this is we're recommending to the board that the project scores all be relative. And by relative, I mean the projects are weighted against those that are submitted to us because we can only fund that which a local government or region sends into the board. And so when we look at who gets the highest score in congestion and how do we develop all of those scores, we're going to base them off the projects that provide the highest level of benefit. And so if you take a look at this slide, the way that would work is three example projects. Project 3 produces 900 hours of person delay. That would get, if it was in this region, the full 35% for the congestion mitigation. So you get up 100% of that score for this region. Project 2, say that reduces only 500 hours of person delay. The percentage of its congestion points that it would get would be scaled based on that highest scoring project. And so you'd get 55% of the congestion score if you were that project.
If 500 is over the 900, that's what you're doing, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah, it's all proportional. And so if in a given year there are a lot of, say there was a project that got 1,500 hours of person delay, project 2's score would no longer be 55. It would drop down to a third of the overall congestion score. And so what I'm really kind of saying to you is, as people across the state start to sharpen their pencils working on this, the better job you do of sharpening your pencils, the better your score will be, because whoever has the project with the highest level of benefits gets the top score, and everyone else's score is based on what the top scoring project does. So, Mr. Chairman, Ms. Hines, that is a very good question. It does mean that a project that one year that's maybe the fifth best project, and say we fund the next four, the next round could be the top. scoring projects. And again, it's relative based on what we can fund. We tried looking at this other ways where we said, if you reduce this many hours of delay, you get the full score, or if you reduce this many, you get the next high score. And then we kind of realized it wasn't appropriate for us to put a value judgment on what was the right amount. We have the projects that we have, and we need to make sure that of what can be constructed, that's what we're considering, and that we try and make the best use of dollars with what's possible, not with what might be theoretical.
So, to that point, you're gonna take a list of projects, you're gonna score them, that standalone set of data. You've talked a lot around the region of the notion of that project that's next on the list. You know, the first guy to lose is obviously gonna be hopeful for the next time. But of course, the next time, new different projects are gonna come in. In talking about 599, one of the things I've got to explain to folks is there are probably projects in Northern Virginia that would have scored higher than our highest scoring projects. But for whatever reason, we didn't consider them. Mainly no one submitted them. And then the question becomes, does the score that you get in year one stand? Or in order for it to be a reasonable outcome, does the project be rescored in the next round in order to have accurate data?
Mr. Chairman, under the draft proposal, its score would be updated.
Okay. It makes sense, but it's not intuitive, particularly to the jurisdiction whose project did okay.
I suspect there will be some robust discussions regarding the first time that happens. One other thing, Mr. Chairman, based on what you said, I do want to remind members of this body is the Commonwealth Transportation Board, similar to the authority, is not required just to select the top scoring projects and fund them in order until they run out of funds. They are still a policy board, and as such, retain the policy discretion to fund those projects they believe, you know, provide the greatest benefit. These scores, however, will be made public prior to the board making draft selections and a draft six-year improvement program being released. And so, again, if we fund a project in a different part of the state that has a lower score than a project up here, I very much expect to see your faces at the six-year improvement hearings saying, why did you do this? Your own data says our project's better. And then I hope we have a very good answer, or we go back and we reconsider our past decisions.
Mr. Rust.
Nick, I've got what was sent around to us. I'm looking at the project score and the little chart you've got.
Mm-hmm.
The board is considering whether total funding or only HB2 eligible funds should be considered. It seems to me, it's a question, that if only HB2 funding is considered, you get one answer. Correct me if I'm wrong. But if you take HB2 funding and let's say Fairfax or Prince William puts another $50 million on the table, that score would be a lot higher the way I did the math. Doesn't that encourage local governments to participate in these things?
Delegate Rust, that is exactly what that would do. And so, just give more background for those in the audience.
What's the question? it seems to me like that would be certainly the Northern Virginia's advantage.
So let me provide.
Been talking to Mr. Braylon down the road.
Don't give away the secret.
So. Delegate Russ, you kind of foreshadowed this slide. So one of the things that the law also requires is... I updated my presentation after I sent it to you. I had a three-hour experience on Monday that advised me a different slide order might be beneficial. So I've modified this slightly. So one of the things, you know, again, the law requires is that we don't just look at what's the largest benefits, but what's the largest benefit for the dollar spent. And again, as I said at the beginning of my remarks, there's $400 million. So even with the increased revenues we have, we're still far from having, you know, unlimited revenues or the ability to address every need. So we're really looking at what can the state achieve with the available resources that it has. And so we're going to be dividing the project benefits by the cost to get some type of relative benefit per $1 million spent. And one of the things that there's been this is the thing the board has discussed the most, is whether or not when we're dividing by cost, we take the total project cost, regardless of whether or not it's state HB2 eligible or includes local, regional, private, whatever other types of funds that they may be, or if we only consider the HB2 kind of incremental burden, if you will, to the state. The staff's recommendation was that we stick with the HB2 only cost, to encourage local communities and others to really try and leverage resources with the state. We have $400 million, and that's all that we have. And if others will commit money with the state, we believe that does provide an advantage to the Commonwealth. However, I would be very remiss if I gave the impression the board has a consensus on this issue, because they're not there. There's been a lot of discussion, particularly by some of the members, Mr. Crescenzi, Mr. Fralin from the Salem District, who've been very vocal, in effect saying, my communities, we're not lucky enough to have additional regional resources like Northern Virginia and Hampton Roads. Similarly, we're not as well off, so we don't have as much disposable resources to co-invest, and they thought that that would be an unfair circumstance for those communities. So I just want to make sure you all hear that other perspective that's being talked about at the board, and I would say there have been those that also say HB2 eligible is exactly what we should be using, and that makes the most sense. So that is one of the things when we're here in May that we're going to talk about and hopefully reach some type of consensus on.
Thank you.
And so again, just to kind of walk you through how that would work, we're going to score projects in this area under Category A. We're going to give you whatever your percentage is of congestion. Say you get a 30 there. We'll figure out what you get for economic development, so on and so forth. We're going to add all of that up. And when we have that number, we're then going to divide by the project's cost to look at what that final score is. And so you're not going to be seeing scores, I don't think, of 100. You're going to be seeing scores that are, you know, less than 1 and up to, you know, 2, 3, 4, maybe even 5 if we're lucky. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to just briefly walk through the draft measures that have been developed by staff so this board is aware of them. I know you've had a lot of discussion here about the 599 process and potential measures. And so again, there's the 6 different metrics. Under the safety measure, we are proposing 2 different ways of examining projects. One would be to look at the just overall reduction in the number of fatalities and severe injuries, and the other would look at the reduction in the rate of fatalities and severe injuries per 100 million vehicle miles traveled. And we're trying to really balance the frequency along with areas where there may not be a lot of driving, but there's a high amount of severe injuries and fatalities for the amount of driving that's taken place. On the congestion mitigation score, we also have 2 measures that are recommended. 50% would be based on the reduction in person hours of delay along the corridor. And the corridor, you know, for this is we are trying to create a very specific definition on that. That was something we heard a lot of feedback on in this room, actually when we held the regional stakeholder meetings this past February. But what we're trying to capture there is that 95 is not just 95. 95 is also Route 1. It's also VRE. And we're trying to look at kind of that broader set of facilities that facilitate travel in those kind of cardinal directions. And then the other congestion mitigation factor would be the increase in person throughput in the corridor. And again, we'd try and use the exact same definition of corridor, but just looking at, are more people able to move through this space, either driving, transit, or whatever type of improvements being proposed, is that helping more people get through that area? Under accessibility, there are 3 measures that are currently proposed. The one that is weighted the highest would be the increase in the cumulative access to jobs within 45 minutes. And so we've developed a GIS tool that covers the entire state where we have the land use and other inputs in there, and we can model with a given project's impact, both from the land use or from the transportation side, what would be the change in the number of jobs people in this region could access within a 45-minute window. I do want to stress this isn't looking at a given person's individual commute. It's looking at kind of the access to job opportunities that would be made improved based on a transportation project. The second measure is a similar type of measure, but it looks at the cumulative increase in the access to essential destinations within 30 minutes. I do want to note for the board, this is one of the things that we've gotten a lot of feedback on. People have kind of said, well, what is an essential destination? And there was a concern expressed by a lot of your staff saying, well, we think this should be activity centers. That's what we believe is essential. You all are a bit more advanced in your planning than some other parts of the state, so many parts of the state don't actually have designated activity centers. And so we are going to talk with the board about whether or not this metric is too subjective to keep into the final ratings there. Because when we were in Virginia Beach, for example, they said the ocean front's an essential destination, right? Busch Gardens is too. And we got into a whole host of discussion about can you charge for an essential destination and things of that nature. And then the last measure under accessibility is really the increase in access to travel options in the corridor. And so this would look at things like, are we improving your ability to access a VRE station? Are we increasing access to transit or bicycle and pedestrian options? On this slide, we're dealing with two measures. The first is the economic development factor. Again, that's one of the lowest weighted factors in this region, but I think it's important for the authority to take a look at this because it's going to be heavily weighted in other parts of the state and will really influence how projects in Southside and Southwest score. And so 70% of this score is really based on the degree to which a project provides support for new or expanded economic activity within the project area. And the way we're looking at that is we are going to be asking for, is this project promoting a particular commercial or industrial site that's consistent with the region's adopted comprehensive economic development strategy? Is it zoned? Is there a site plan? Are there utilities? And then we'll also be looking at the magnitude of the development. Kind of, so how big is it? How much square footage are you anticipating will take place? And we're trying to make sure that we really capture proposals that aren't conceptual. I think we really have to move away from the concept of four lane my primary and growth will magically happen. We really need to hear from people more, improve this interchange. We've been working to attract this type of industry here. And in fact, we've extended utilities to the site. Those two things would get vastly different scores under this measure. The second half of the economic development score really deals with improved freight and intermodal efficiency. And so this would be looking at reliability on the national network, which is a federally designated kind of truck network. And then it would also deal with kind of improvements in access to intermodal distribution and manufacturing facilities. The environmental factor has three measures under it. The first, which is 50% of the score, deals with the degree to which the project is likely to improve air quality or reduce greenhouse gas emissions. In this, they look at a host of measures. A lot of them deal with the degree to which the project will enhance non-SOV travel and actually attract real usage of those types of facilities. There is also items within that that deal with reducing bottlenecks where there's a high degree of truck traffic, which really creates the particulate matter pollution that we experience in this region and some other parts of the Commonwealth. The second half of the environmental score is very similar to some of the things you saw in accessibility. However, it's focused on disadvantaged populations, so it's really intended to be an environmental justice type of metric, looking at low-income, disadvantaged, and elderly kind of populations and their access to jobs as well as essential destinations. I do want to kind of pause here, just as I did on the essential destinations previously, and say some folks, including some of your staff, have said we think this is better under accessibility and that there are projects that perhaps create environmental benefits, like improving stormwater, that should be captured here. When we developed this, we did not include anything dealing with natural, cultural, or historic resources, not because it was an oversight, but because it was staff's position that the NEPA and permitting processes would address that. So we, as the 460 project, it's unfortunately a very prime example of, if a project creates a lot of environmental impact, we cannot get a permit and build it. However, some folks have also kind of really come back to us and given us a different perspective on that. So I expect we may see some revisions to this measure as well at the May CTV meeting, just based on the feedback that we've received.
Yeah. So ultimately, where are all these inputs actually coming from? Who's actually assigning the scores and plugging them into the computer or whatever the case is?
So, Mr. Chairman, the way the process is going to work is there's going to be an online application for local governments and regional entities with a lot of drop-down menus. And so all of these things will be in there. And so, for example, on congestion, we'll say, what type of project is this? There will be a list of options, and including an other, for some reason we haven't thought of where it is. You'll tell us. We'll say, where does it start and stop? There will be a little GIS map, hopefully, where you can click. And then the project limits, and the staff at the state will be responsible for undertaking the project scores and reviews. One of the things the secretary told staff, as well as committed to the board when we started this process, is this will not be like the Tiger Grant process. Nobody has to hire a consultant to be able to get money back from the state. Now, I'm not entire grant process has been very good in Virginia, so I don't want anyone to take it the wrong way, but we're going to take on the burden at the state level, and we hope to have a very simple and streamlined process, either for the authority or your local governments when you're submitting projects to us. There will be information that we'll need from you, but we are trying to make it very simple for the input, and then we will do the score.
But for instance, like on the economic development, who actually, I mean, that's not necessarily something the transportation staff would be the best served to evaluate. So is like VDEP giving input on something like that, or?
So we are, we have been talking about that with the Commonwealth Transportation Board as well. I expect we are going to have a few teams that are probably led by staff, but consist of consultants and some other folks that score these projects. We've also been talking about how do we put in place quality assurance and quality control as we do this. So some of the things we're considering is having, say, three teams, and each of them score 40% of the projects. And so there's a natural overlap of 20%. We've got to go in and make sure for the projects, and they won't know, that are scored by two different teams, did we get the same score? And if we didn't, we need to kind of hit pause, go back and talk to everybody and do a rescoring there. So we are working through some of these issues. I do want to be honest. We have some more work to do. We're trying to get the process in place first, and then there's going to be a little bit of internal, not a little bit, there's going to be some internal housework that we need to do to make sure we have a smooth process.
We are beta testing this right now because Nick is due to deliver some test scoring to the CTB next month.
Yes.
So some of those questions we'll get into.
I would imagine that some of our jurisdictions would probably score our own projects just to test how they get scored by you guys, and then is there a way of challenging the scores?
That, Mr. Chairman, well, that is something that we're looking at. We did convene a peer workshop and we brought in MPOs and states that have already done something like this, and they did say that having some type of process where people can say, hey, I'm not sure you appropriately considered this, would be very helpful. And so we're trying to figure out how we can work something like that into the time frame. We are also currently trying to create this web portal where the factors we're using will be available to you all, your staff, and to the authority staff in advance, and so it's not a black box. We really want to make this as transparent a process as possible. And so for the safety factors measures, for example, what we're going to be using is what's called a crash modification factor, and it was developed using statistical analysis, and it says that if you're having these types of crashes and you make this improvement, a reasonable person could expect that you would see a 80% reduction in crashes. And we're going to put all of those types of things online in advance so that as you're thinking about projects or considering them, you can go in and look at that. The other thing I would say is we talked with the commissioner as well as Director Mitchell, and they are really going to be working to have their staff available to your staff as you all develop applications and consider putting those in so we can help you all understand how things may or may not score, or how you might be able to increase the score by taking certain steps.
Nick, can I just ask a follow-up question about the crash piece? As everybody is aware, you know, when the closer you get to the river in Arlington, the more complex the people are using the road. So we've got, if you think about Roslyn, we've got a significant bike population coming through there. We've got lots of walkers. Do we have cars? How does the crash model sort of look beyond the car at these other sets of users of the right-of-way?
Mr. Chairman, Chairman Hines, it does not do the best job of it. So we are trying to work with some folks to come up with that. It does a very good job on the automobile side. There are some crash modifications for non-motorized travel. I would candidly say some of it is a bit nonsensical. So, for example, it says if you add a bike lane to a road, it becomes less safe for bicyclists. I think we could probably all agree that doesn't make a whole host of sense. And so we've been talking with FHWA as well as some other regions that have gone down these processes to try and work with them on the non-motorized. We're very comfortable with the motorized figures there to try and improve that calculation because right now, as I said, some of it just doesn't make sense.
Just to give everybody the context, we count bike and ped crossing Key Bridge every day. It's 6,000 people on foot or on bike every day going across Key Bridge in Roslyn. 6,000. So it really does matter.
reading this, I wouldn't be conscientious of the time. We have at least one other pretty significant item tonight. Is there anything else that hasn't come up that we talked about that's an urgency? If not, what I'd like to do actually is jump down to item 10. Staff has prepared some comments from the authority on this issue that you would capture a number of the things. To me, if you would jump in on here.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, as noted, item 10 does have a full list of comments prepared by the JAC. I'm not sure if you want me to go through each bullet quickly or how you would like me to take this.
You've been sent out to the members. Is there anything in the comments that is inconsistent with or addresses the questions that have been received?
I'm not sure if there's anything inconsistent with. I will note, one thing regarding just because the safety measures have just come up under the evaluation measures, the staff did have a question about, it's an agreement that fatalities and severe injuries should be a factor. We believe that measurement should not be limited to those criteria, that all accidents should be included. That was an idea brought forward by the JAC that I did want to share. And I believe Nick has talked about that, and Deputy Secretary Donahue has talked about that in presentation.
And Ms. Chairman, if I could just respond briefly to that. What we've tried to do is focus on all of these measures on the items where we can really demonstrate results and that create the biggest issues within the Commonwealth. And so, for example, on crashes, we do only focus on fatalities and severe injuries. On the flip side, for this region, when we look at delay, we're looking only at delay that exists where there's level of service E. So we're assuming capacity of a roadway at level of service E there, which really focuses on the more severe types of congestion and stop-and-go issues. And so what I would kind of say is that has some implications for some more rural parts of the state that don't have a lot of delay when you look, assume the capacity really at level service E, and they really don't want to include fender bender types of crashes. And so I would just say, by not including those crashes, safety will be, you will have a lower impact on safety from a lot of your projects. However, 35% of the score in this area is based on congestion, and the way the congestion score has been developed, it's one that is focused on the most severe types of congestion problems, which tend to exist in this region as well as Hampton Roads.
Two more comments I did want to bring up. Under environmental quality, as the Deputy Secretary mentioned, we did have comments in here saying that the access to essential destinations are extremely important, but we felt they belong more in accessibility than environmental quality. And then in regards to Delegate Ruff's comments on the project costs, at the bottom of page 3 on the comments, there is a bullet saying that in the letter the authority sent back in December, they did address the co-funded projects issue, so this just reiterates it. It says, the authority continues to strongly support the provision that for purposes of cost-benefit analysis, the benefits will be calculated relative to the HB2 costs only. The reason for that is it's important to leverage various sources, and that HB 2313 specifically says that Northern Virginia's regional funds cannot be used to calculate or reduce our share of local, federal, or state revenues otherwise available to participating jurisdictions. So that is continued on in these comments.
I would also welcome any comments by individual members of this body prior to our meeting. If you want a particular point made, I'm there for Northern Virginia. So,
Mr. Chairman, back when the General Assembly adopted HB2 in 2014, it did something unusual. It said that the CTB shall consider comments from various stakeholder groups. Then they said something interesting in the code. It said that the board shall explicitly consider, using that adverb, input provided by the MBTA. If I was a judge reading that statute, I'd say this means whatever input comes from this authority shall be given high probative weight by the CTB. What that means to me is that it's important for us to get it right and make sure that our comments are not only comprehensive, but really set forward, you know, the consensus of this body, because we want to get it right the first time. And so I would suggest that unless there's a real hurry on us getting this down to the CTB, that we maybe have a work session on that to make sure that these comments embody the review that we all have as a corporate authority.
Doug will mention, there is a sense of urgency because a lot of these debates are going to happen next month in Northern Virginia. So there's a window of only about 3 weeks if we want to fine tune what Mr. Mingus has in his intent here. So there is a sense of that.
Mr. Chairman, may I suggest the JAC, which has staff members from all the localities as well as the regional agencies, we compiled about 4 pages worth of notes here. I'm not sure if the authority would like to take them home, read through them, see if there's any changes, and then we can, Ms. Bachman can draft a letter based on the feedback or something along those lines. Or tier six.
I don't want to do something that creates unnecessary delay in this. May I suggest this? What I'd like to do, to that point, is if we can approve these this evening, with the understanding that if jurisdictions come up with additional comments, we can funnel those to Ms. Bachman, and we have to have something in front of these folks pretty quickly.
Yeah.
We do have a little bit of time if there are technical adjustments or if there's major objections. I think at this point we've run this through the process enough that hopefully there won't be any major objections. We can always provide additional commentary at CDB. I am reticent to delay this process because we don't meet again until after the CDB. We need to have this finalized before that.
I think that worked with the chairman. I just noting the importance of the comments, given that the General Assembly has given us kind of a higher priority of comment for the weight. And since we have a good collection of leaders from our local government, I want to make sure that we really crystallize their thinking in our corporate comments to go to CDB.
Any other comments, questions?
And the process that happened so far to bring us to these comments, so our staffs have already been working together.
Madam Chairman, yes, we sent out the policy guide to the entire JAC when it was released last March. At the JAC meeting 2 weeks ago, we all sat there and talked and came up with comments, and then it went out for draft about a week ago to add any modification or change or make any modifications. I will say that the comments brought forward by Chairman Owen, Chairman Bulova, and Chair Hines were not included in this list of comments, but we will include those in the final letter, if that's the will.
I think the other thing I'll note is that there are in many cases, individual jurisdictions are also providing comments separate from the authority that would get into some of the spaces where there might be room for disagreement within the region.
Very nice.
Is that Prince William's commented on 66 inside the Beltway. Excellent. I'd like to move forward on this. I do understand the concerns. I guess what I'll ask is there a motion on this? On these comments?
I'll second the motion, and that's with the understanding that, you know, we still have the opportunity if we have staffs and our jurisdictions want to additionally weigh in. We'll have that opportunity to do so. You know, this doesn't close the door entirely, not being able to comment.
It would be a consensus comment, though, right?
It would come through that Monica.
It has to come through Monica and be a consensus, because we can each say our individual issue from the bill.
We have a motion from Mr. Letourneau, second from Mrs. Bulova. I do consider that the observation comment can be amended through Monica on a consensus basis. That's always been our practice. Any other discussion on this? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Abstain.
Of course, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much.
I'm sure you go for 1 minute more. I just want to highlight this slide here.
Uh-huh.
This shows you the funding that's currently set aside in the six-year program under these two funding programs that I talked about. You can see the funding that's dedicated just to Northern Virginia, as well as the funding that is set aside for the High Priority Projects Program. And I just wanted to highlight that for the authority, as well as for the members of the General Assembly that are here. We gave out numbers during the session as we changed the formula, and I just wanted to show everyone that the numbers are the same.
Okay.
So the percentage going to Northern Virginia, you see there, 20.7 is the exact same as was provided during the session, and then all the other percentages are the same as well. And we'll begin the solicitation for projects August 1 this year.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you all. Okay, jumping back up, number of action items. We have the approval of the budget adjustment, mutual revenue fund budget, Mr. Longy.
Yes, Chairman, there are members of the authority. Item 5 is a budget item. It addresses a voluntary withdrawal from a WMATA bus project. The action will return $7 million of project funding to the Regional Revenue Fund, and a copy of the letter from WMATA requesting the withdrawal is attached.
Questions, comments? Do you have a
motion?
All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much.
Chairman Noe, item 6 will set the FY16 regional revenue budget. As you are aware, the regional revenues are 70% funds, must first be used to meet debt service obligations. After debt service, funds may be allocated for projects, which is the item on your agenda tonight. Updating the authority from previous briefings on a proposed regional revenue budget, significant developments are the $7 million withdrawal just addressed. To let you know that consensus was reached with the member jurisdictions on the funding of the transaction update. The executive director is forming an advisory panel to develop policies for the contingency and transportation project reserves. This funding decisions for the transportation project reserve will be presented after policy approval. No funds from both of those reserves will be used until the policies are in place. These adjustments adjust the proposed funding of the transportation project reserve from $12 million to zero, pending the establishment of the policy, increases the regional revenue fund balance available for projects from the previous $359 million to $371 million. And in the interest of time, if you would like me to run through a summary statement as the last attachment on the staff report, I can do that. If you go to item 6B, which is the last attachment on this item, the funds available for projects are $371 million. We'll note that the current projects recommended to the project implementation working group were $337.9 million, and the April 13th recommendations added another $8 million. So the total recommended projects that you'll see in the next item are $345 million. This leaves unprogrammed funds of $25.1 million. Now, this is a kind of a separate snapshot in the next box. We have a working capital reserve that the FY16 proposed budget will complete the funding of, and that is $103.5 million, and that is governed by the debt policy. We also have a debt service reserve of $5.5 million, which was funded through the debt issuance of our first issuance. So we have restricted reserves of $109 million. The contingency for approved projects, the Finance Committee recommends funding at $7.8 million. As I previously noted, the $12 million the Finance Committee requested be removed, and the decision on that funding be deferred until the policy was ready. And so we have NBTA directed reserves of $7.8 million. So to address the amount of spending that or funds left over from the potential approval, the NBTA directed reserves and unprogrammed funds, which is the $25.1 million and the $7.8, will be $32.9 million. Those are funds that ultimately are under the authority's control. Total reserves and unprogrammed funds is $141.9 million.
Any questions, Mr. Long? Is there anything on the Finance Committee that we need to add to this?
No, Mr. Long, you did an excellent job of summarizing our discussion.
Thank you. Okay, is there a motion?
Second.
Motion by Ms. Hines, second by Ms. Bullock. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much, Mr. Long. Move back.
Mr. Chairman, on your agenda tonight is the approval of the fiscal year 2015-2016 two-year program. Just to briefly give a reminder, we issued the call for projects for this program in December of 2013. 52 projects were submitted for February 2014, and 33 of those projects were highway projects, which were recommended to the CTB to be rated and evaluated as part of the HB 599 process. The 19 transit projects, of course, were not included in the 599 evaluation, but it was always the authority's intent to include transit projects in the HB 599 process. I've asked Keith Jasper, who's really been the lead on the two-year program, to speak to the specifics and the work of the April 13th Project Implementation Working Group.
Mr. Chairman, members of the authority, I'd like to draw your attention, first of all, to the memorandum. At the bottom of page one, I'll kind of pick up the story from there. We held a public hearing, which many of you were present for, on March 25th. From that, we moved to the Project Implementation Working Group meeting on April 13th. Which considered the comments that were generated by the public hearing and other ways in which we received comments, including from town hall meetings and also from a petition. I'll talk a little bit more about that in just a moment. The recommendation that came from the PIWG meeting on April 13th resulted, as Mr. Longby just said, in recommending 21 highway projects and 16 mass transit projects for a total amount of $345,939,000, leaving, as Mr. Longley said, $25 plus million unallocated. I'd like to start with the comments, a summary of the comments from the public hearing process overall. We received 229 comments from all sources, and this included testimony from the public hearing, a 467 signature petition, which, for the purposes of the way we handled the information, we treated as a single comment among the 229 comments. And all of the public comments are now posted on the authority's website. The packet that you have has a fairly large document which lists all the 229 comments. I'm not going to address those in my remarks any further, but if you have any questions, I'll do my best to answer them. I'd like to instead turn to attachment B in your packet, item 7, attachment B. Which is the overview of the comments. As I mentioned, 229 items are in the database, which are in your packet. And at the Project Implementation Working Group meeting, we summarised these in three different groups. Comments related exclusively to Project 8S, which is the Fairfax County project to widen US 1 Richmond Highway. There was a very substantial support expressed for that project. The second group of comments related to multiple projects.
I don't think everyone can hear it. Someone in some other room has a microphone on that's feeding through these speakers. I'm hearing typing and coughing.
Yes. It's really distracting.
And I thought the title was Camelot.
It's not me.
No, it's not. I thought it was, but then the coughing started.
I know.
Keep going, Keith. If someone has ability to figure out, it's a little weird. And at first, that's no big deal. It's got louder. I'm sure it's not supposed to work that way. I'm sorry, continue.
To continue, the second group of comments related to provided support for multiple projects, included among them was the Project 8S, the route
the US 1 Richmond Highway widening. And then the third group of comments were completely unrelated to Project S, but they did express a wide degree of support for various projects in the recommended program, which we took to public hearing. There are also some process-related comments, which didn't focus so much on projects as more the way we went about the business of coming up with recommended projects. So I'd like to turn now, if I may, to attachment C in your packet. This is a document that's referred to as supporting documentation, but it, essentially it contains the list of recommended projects, and I'd like to get to that list as quickly as possible. Just before I do that, I just want to point out the first couple of pages, or particularly the first page of attachment C, is a brief refresher on the project selection process, which started back in the summer of last year, you discussed and approved the process at your meeting in October of last year, when the HB 599 ratings became available, we folded that in. But in particular, I wanted to stress that the process that was adopted by the authority was particularly geared towards projects that offered congestion relief, but also complementary to that was the project readiness, so that not only would congestion relief be delivered by the projects, but it would be delivered quickly. And the authority's process very much reflects that, as you'll see when I turn to tables 1 and 2. So towards the end of this attachment, you have some very brightly coloured tables. I'd like to start with table 1, which addresses the highway projects. There are now 21 recommended projects, which is 3 more than we took to the public hearing. But let me just very quickly walk you through this list. The first group of projects from the top down to the Herndon East Elgin Street project were recommended because these were the projects which achieved the highest MBTA score using the process that was adopted by the, approved by the authority in October. So that's why those projects were selected. And then beneath that, you'll see another 5 projects which are highlighted in yellow and recommended. And just quickly, while we move to those projects and left some gaps in between, firstly, the Frontier Drive Extension Project, 8R, this project was added as a result of following the public hearing process. There were expressions of support for this project, and in your packet in attachment D, there is a letter from Fairfax County which provides a greater background as to the congestion benefit reliefs of this project. The next project that is recommended is the Leesburg project, Route 15 bypass. This, in fact, is a project that was approved in your fiscal year 14 program, and so as part of our qualitative considerations approach to the selection process, this project was added because it reflects a continuation of funding for an already approved project. We then have the Fairfax County Route 28 widening project. This project is included because you'll note it's got a pretty decent HB 599 rating of 17.3. This project was added because although it's in preliminary engineering, it will offer the potential for some congestion relief in the Route 28 corridor sooner than some other projects which are being considered. Project 5C is rolling road widening. This project was added in part because of comments received in the public hearing. It also has a fairly decent HB 599 rating. And you'll also note under phase funded, we indicate ROW for right-of-way acquisition. So this project is fairly advanced. Finally, we added the project which was the subject of the majority of comments that we received during the public hearing process, the Fairfax County US 1 Richmond Highway project widening. Just as one final comment on table 1, you'll notice that many of the projects, particularly in the upper half of the table, which came out as recommended using the authority's process, will be applying, if approved by the authority, will be applying regional funds to construction activities. And that is where you see the process that was adopted, emphasizing projects which will deliver congestion relief faster. I can pause there if there's any questions before I move to table two. Okay, table two contains the recommended transit projects. And pretty much here we recommended, or the project implementation working group has recommended the highest scoring, the 15 highest scoring projects using the MBTA scoring system, with the addition of one project at the bottom of the list, which although this project received the lowest MBTA score, this project, the VRE Crystal City Platform Extension Study for $400,000 was included because although it's a study, there are many other studies apparently going on that affect this particular VRE corridor, and it's very important, VRE argued, that this study will help locate the Crystal City station within the context of those other studies which are ongoing. So if this study didn't start at this time, there's a potential that the Crystal City project would become out of whack with the other studies that are going on, or whatever is recommended by those studies. Finally, table three, I'll just briefly touch upon one of the qualitative, well, actually two of the qualitative considerations within the project selection process we used were a geographic balance and modal balance. We don't have any kind of particular standard that we apply to say whether something is geographically or modally balanced, but this table is intended to show that the POWG was concerned that projects would not be selected that would all be clustered in one part of the region or would be predominantly one mode or another mode. And so this table is intended to show you how, if the projects are approved, the regional revenues will be distributed by location and by mode.
And this is your recommended program, Mr. Chair.
Is it appropriate time for a motion then? Or?
Sure.
So I move adoption of the fiscal year 2015-2016 program.
Second motion. Motion from Mr. Evans, second from Mr. Rust. Before we take action, I want to go into the considerations. I know there's at least one case, there may be others. I know of at least one case where a member may have a conflict with a project here. So to that end, I'd like to divide the motion on that. So, Ms. Bashir, you have it?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have a conflict with 6L on the transit list, and so I am going to vote for these projects, but abstain from that one particular project.
I'll look at councils. Do we need to take separate votes, or is that acknowledgement sufficient to protect her?
Our recommendation would be to take separate votes.
Okay, so I'll revise the motion. I move the adoption of the fiscal year 2015-16 two-year program with the exception of Project 6L.
Are there any other projects that we need to exclude for a separate vote? Okay. And Mr. Russ, that's part of your second, I presume?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Okay, discussion, questions, comments, Dave?
I just have a question not relating to the project list, but the issue of long-term revenue versus benefit. And I'm wondering, and I know that was referenced in item 8 on page 4 of one of the attachments. We're going to keep studying this issue, is that right? And we're going to refine our methodology on that issue.
Right. Councilmember Snyder, at your December meeting, you adopted the principles, the guiding principles for determining long-term benefit. And one thing that came, or not one thing, but one of the prominent principles was after 10 years, we'll go back and retrospectively do a calculation, if you will. With the adoption of this two-year program tonight, the MBTA said we've already started this process. Now, we haven't run a model because the principles also included whatever is the latest model at that time. We would use that model. But we are keeping a tab on that, if you will, so we can start with some of the initial figures.
I think that's a very important issue, and I don't hear any dissent that staff continue to refine that issue and model. Thank you.
Anything else? I want to thank everybody. I mean, Monica touched on this fact. We did the call for projects in December of 2013, and it feels like an eternity ago, but it also feels like it was like about a month ago. And to think that the organization has been in existence for 13 years. We've been in business for just less than 2 years. The bill was signed less than 2 years ago. And we are now in the process of adopting our second major set of investments. This really is a big deal. Because again, and you've heard me say it before, we sat, I want to say at this table, it was actually the other table at the other next door building. We sat in the other conference room next door 25 months ago, and we were just shocked that the bill had passed. No one really thought it was going to happen, and here we are.
You little things.
I knew as long as Tom Rust was in the General Assembly.
It's going to happen now.
But again, this is really extraordinary work. There's probably not a project on this list that we're going to adopt tonight that someone couldn't come up with some criticisms of. And I think the work that we do in the regions often falls in that category of the definition of a good deal is one where everyone feels a little disappointed, and the bad deal is one where everyone feels very disappointed. But again, I think that we have, this is a huge leap forward in terms of doing the thing that we spent 11 years talking about doing. And I find it, people used to ask what transaction was, and we used to say, it's the document that answers the question, what would you do with $3 million to $100 million if you had it? We now have $300 million, and we're proving them that that's what we're going to do. So I want to thank, I'm not going to bother naming names, but there are so many people who got us to this point, and it's a big deal. So thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I would comment, if I've looked at the numbers right, that we're going to approve a number of projects tonight almost equivalent to which the Commonwealth will spend in an entire year throughout the entire state.
And I would just like, sorry about this voice, but I would just like to point out that the process that has been developed within a relatively short period of time to really put metrics and thought behind the selection of cross-growth projects, I think it's been pretty phenomenal. And I think it really speaks well to the work of the authority. And I appreciate the outreach that we've done out to the community and to make sure that the community understands the kind of process that each project has been weighed under. So I think this is historic. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, first of all, I'll associate myself with the comments of the chairman and also Dr. Rust, that given the hole that we were in as a region with underfunding of our transportation infrastructure resources for a number of years, in fairly short order, this will do this project list, in my opinion, do a great job in relieving some congestion. And I think it's a good project list. I'm going to vote for it. I'd only ask that we go forward, and we'll be doing this again in a couple of years, that we should always keep an eye toward what are the game-changer projects that really have regional significance that will give a regional shot in the arm for addressing congestion for our entire region. I'm not sure what they are, but they're out there. And since we're engaging in triage by adopting these projects that have been needed for a while, which is a wonderful thing, I just think as we go forward in our corporate lives and authority, let's keep an eye toward these, again, as Meadow described, I call them game changer projects, but really would give a regional bang for the buck and strengthen our entire region.
We need to vote.
Yes, why not?
Yeah.
It's a big deal. We have press releases to put out.
Come on,
I would like to make a thought, or have a thought and share it with everyone. First of all, let me say to the group that's around this table, I'm mindful of those that we have worked with, both in terms of Virginia staff. As well as senators and delegates from that serve in Richmond, and especially perhaps the elected representatives here in Northern Virginia. It is something that I appreciate as a member from Manassas. I appreciate the fact that we are able to work well together. In addition, I'm mindful of our staff and the energetic staff that we have, and I want to thank them for what they've done and frankly also what they'll do, because we've got more to accomplish. And with regard to Delegate Minshew talks about those projects that are game changers, I'll relate that to something I've said, and you all have heard me say. I'm looking forward to the determination of what the UDTA really will be when it grows up. Because we've got some large decisions to make, and I hope there are large decisions to make about the future of transportation here in Northern Virginia, because I do think there's game-changer projects, and there is more work to do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I too want to, I'm the new kid on the block. I still feel that way in this authority, and so I think about all of you who sat and labored over those 11 years, and thank you for hanging in, and thank you to our delegates and our senators. We had an interesting conversation at the PIWG about the fact that while we have two lists here today, we have a road list and we have a transit list, that when we really started talking about the projects, many of our projects are multimodal. We haven't described them necessarily that way, but there's an awful lot of projects here that are adding a trail or improving pedestrian access, as well as adding capacity of roads or capacity for transit. And I really encourage us, as we continue to move this forward, to find a way to convey that message to the public. Because the solution here in Northern Virginia isn't one of anything. The solution is all of it. All of it moving together to give people choices that make sense in their lives. And the more we can help people see that in the choices we make and the way we describe these projects, the better off we're all going to be, because we can't just pick one and do one. It won't work. So.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously. And then we need a motion on item 6L.
I move that we adopt the fiscal year 2015-16 year program with respect to item 6L.
Second. Second by Mr. Minshew. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? And one abstention.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Good job, everyone. A couple more business items. We have the adoption of Policy 16. Ms. Beckman.
Mr. Chairman, in your packet, item number 8 this evening is approval of Policy 16, the Standard Project Agreement Activation, as recommended by the Authority Finance Committee. Essentially, when the authority assigns funding to a project, it's with the expectation that this project will advance and per the approved scope of work. However, if there is an issue with any particular project in getting to the SPA phase, the authority, being mindful of its best interest, may need to deobligate these funds. This policy addresses projects that are not advancing to an executed standard project agreement, and I want to make that clear. It's not for once you have a SPA, then there are additional delays. This is for projects that have not had an approved standard project agreement. The MBTA funds may be made available from actions taken under this policy, and they could be returned to the regional revenue funds. It's important to note for your FY14 project list, we have 29 approved standard project agreements. We have two that we think will be approved at your May meeting. And after that, your FY14 program will have approved SPAs for every project. And I do want to note the authority has closed out two projects. When I say closed out, these projects have been reimbursed and they are complete. One thing to note, if the SPA has not been approved by the governing body of the sponsoring entity within 6 months of project approval by the authority, the project shall be considered for NBTA action to deobligate funds for the project. And I say considered because if we don't have an SPA approved by the authority within 6 months, it doesn't automatically trigger deactivation. That means that I need to sit and make contact with the localities or agencies to see what's going on. Now, we do that anyway. Every authority meeting, as part of my report, we include a status update of all the projects, and that's also posted to the website. So we know the phases or what's going on with the project. At the request of a sponsoring entity made within 6 months, the authority, at its discretion, may refer the matter to the appropriate committee for recommended extension of the time frame. So the entity, the jurisdiction or agency, may request an extension beyond the 6 months. In all cases, agreement will be sought with the implementing jurisdiction or agency. If the agreement is not forthcoming, the executive director may take the deobligation request to the authority for action.
Any comments, questions on this?
And I do want to note, this policy governs the FY, the program that you just approved and your standalone FY17 program, which we haven't initiated yet. When we update transaction and get to the point where we have a full 6-year program, fiscal years 18 to 23, we will have to revisit this policy. So this policy governs what you just adopted.
I'll move
approval,
Mr. Chairman.
Motion from Mrs. Hines.
Yes. Second the motion.
Second from Mrs. Bullock. Any questions or comments?
I guess the operative word is that nothing is deobligated without their right of discussion and consideration as to perhaps the reasons for why.
That is correct, Chairman Bullock.
The authority, what the policy says is that at the 6-month mark, Ms. Backman will have a meeting. The truth is, she'll probably be having meetings at the 4-month mark if there's problem. But at the 6-month mark,
right,
she brings it to our attention and comes with a recommendation when she feels it's appropriate.
That is correct, Chairman.
And then automatically evaporates.
Exactly.
You can't do that. I'm all in favor. Is that?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much. Let's go over board from transaction updates. Mr. Madoff.
Good evening. What you have in front of you is the statement of work for the consultant RFP for the transaction update. You don't have the full RFP. The legal boilerplate is being reviewed separately by the Council of Councils. So you're looking at the statement of work, which is the planning activity only, the real meat of the RFP. It's been developed over the last 6 months or so by the Transaction Subcommittee, which is part of the JAC. We've been working on it quite extensively. We've had regular and lengthy meetings on the subject. The JAC has had a chance to review and offer comments, as have the TAC and the PCAC. We are looking for the NBTA to approve the scope tonight. If you do so, we will be able to post the RFP as soon as we have Council of Council sign off. We would then move forward with consultant selection this spring and have work start after that. If you'd like, I'd be happy to take you through an outline of the tasks, or we could just go ahead and talk.
Anyone
want to
hear the outline?
Great.
Penny Gross is going to stick her head in the door any minute now. She's going to give me her looks. Any questions for Mr. Bailoff on this? Thanks for working on this. I move a motion for approval.
Move approval.
Move a motion for Mr. Schneider.
Second.
Second by Mrs. Bullock. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Excellent. Item 11 is the testimony for the Commonwealth Transportation Board program, 6-year program in V-Trans 2040. Dominguez.
Mr. Chairman, I am going to quickly go through this just because it's a blue sheeted item, so not no one has seen this as is at the moment, but I will be quick. As you've done in the past, the last time was in October, we put together some testimony for the six-year improvement program, and then also the state has been working on VTrans 2040, which is the multimodal, the Commonwealth's long-range statewide multimodal policy plan. They currently have a draft vision, goals, objectives, and guiding principles document out for comments, so we've provided some comments on those as well. Starting on page one, I will say most of the information on page one is items you have seen before. It generally talks about the need for the Commonwealth and the authority to work together as 2313, HB 599, HB 2, HB 1887 are all being considered. So I'll continue on to the bottom of page one. I will say there is a new comment down at the bottom that talks about state of good repair funds. As many of you know, 45% of HB 1887 funds go to state of good repair. At the in the presentation at the, for the CTV last week, they kind of broke those down by the percentages by construction district. It's important to note that no construction district can get less than 5% or more than 17.5% of the state of good repair funds. Northern Virginia is expected to receive about 10.6% of these funds. For the six-year program, that's about $36.1 million. I think this bullet note's concern that we're only getting 10.6% of these funds based on how bad some of our roads in Northern Virginia are. The next bullet, at the top of page two, talks about the plan in the draft six-year program to substantially decrease funding for revenue sharing. What this program does, as you all know, it lets a dollar for dollar locality applies and then gets a dollar from the state for a dollar the locality puts in. It's been incredibly successful in Northern Virginia. The plan in the six-year program is to have it at its current amount, which I believe is $185 million this year, goes all the way down to $50 million in the end, within 2021. So this bullet voices concern with that issue. And then continuing on to VTrans, I'm going to let Keith go over that really quickly.
Thank you. Attachment B to the blue sheet does include the VTrans vision statement, some guiding principles, and on the last page, the goals. And these comments relate to each of those items. Firstly, with the vision statement, one thing that is quite striking is that it's appropriately addresses looking at the transportation system from a business perspective, but we're also arguing that it should address the needs of Virginians specifically as well, so we've asked for that to be addressed. With regard to the guiding principles, we're generally in concurrence with the guiding principles. These will be used to kind of help develop the plan that will follow from this. But we have highlighted some things. Guiding principle number one, optimizing return on investment. Obviously, it's very important to us that this addresses all modes and not just highways. So we wanted to ask that to be clear. Guiding principle four, operational improvements and demand management. This really speaks to the importance of transportation technology and other options, innovative in nature, to influence travel behavior, which again, in Northern Virginia, we think is probably going to be very, very important. Certainly we'll address that within our own transaction long-range plan. And also the future role and impact with all bad of driverless vehicles. Guiding principle five, talks about transparency, accountability, and performance management. This may suggest that there's the need for monitoring systems to be able to actually to measure these things. So that's something we're looking for a bit of guidance on. Coordination between transportation and land use and guiding principle number six talks about providing incentives. We'd like to understand a bit more what is meant by incentives. And then just a few extra comments on the goals, which was you see listed here, which kind of in terms of economic competitiveness, we'd like to understand how that relates to increasing person throughput as another objective. Accessibility and connected places, as Mr. Donahue mentioned earlier, regional activity centres are very important to us in Northern Virginia. We'd like to see that addressed. And as far as safety for all users, we certainly would like to see that incorporate all modes, not just roadways.
And then, Mr. Chairman, the bullets at the end, or starting with the middle of page 3, continuing on, are essentially identical to what was approved in previous.
Questions, comments? We have a motion for approval. A motion for Mr. Snyder, seconded by Mr. Rust. Comment from Mrs. Bowe.
This hearing is scheduled for April 28th, which is for most of us a board day.
Yes.
We have a board of supervisors meeting. As does, I think, the city of Fairfax and others. So I just, if we could find a better way of coordinating things so that we don't have to include officials who are at work with their time.
Mr. Chairman, if would you like us to include some language in here in regards to that? We'd be happy to draft it down. Or,
sure.
Okay.
Sure. Tell them Thursdays work well.
Will do.
I will share before they answer this. As has been the case for the last 3 or 4 CTV hearings, VDOT has invited me as chairman of the authority to sit on the panel. I won't be reading these comments into the record. We'll provide them in writing. That makes me scream a smile. I'll reference them when I'm asked to comment from the dais, but we won't take long periods of time because a lot of this material seems to be seen. Okay. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Ms. Bass, is there anything else you need to know?
Just one item, Mr. Chairman, and I've emailed this to the members in your packet in the correspondence section, is the invitation that we sent out to the authorities groundbreaking on the Route 28 project, and which were approved on your fiscal year 14 project list. And this speaks to the authority being a major player, if you will, regarding making transportation investments. This groundbreaking is Monday, May 11th at 1 p.m. at the Innovation Avenue Bridge.
Excellent. Any other matters to come before the authority this evening? Hearing none, we're adjourned. Thank you all very much.